Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. My guest this evening will be baker and cook par excellence, Paula Scheuer. Paula is a freelance writer for the Washington Post, Hadassah Magazine, Joy of Kosher, and Jewish Food Experience, among others. She's graduated from the Ritz Escoffier in Paris. She teaches cooking and baking across the U.S. and the world. She has appeared on various television shows around the country. Good evening, Paula.
Hi, Chaim. Nice to be here.
One of the reasons we invited you was not just because of your current book, I believe it's your fourth book, but also because you happen to be one of this audience's favorites.
That's so nice to hear.
So tell us, how did you get into cooking, in baking? I believe you were originally a lawyer.
Yes, I was originally a lawyer, but if you go further back than that, I used to really enjoy spending time in my grandmother's kitchen in Brooklyn, watching her bake and measure ingredients with her hands. And my own mother cooked but didn't bake, so it was a really big deal for me to spend time at my grandmother's house. And as a result, I always liked to cook and bake, but didn't think that that was a professional option for me. And I went to Brandeis University, and then I went to law school in D.C., and I practiced law for 4 years in Washington, where I live now. And during that time, I was always entertaining, hosting Shabbat dinners, and I always loved to cook and try out new recipes. And then my husband was working for the U.S. Trade Representative's office, and they sent us to Geneva, Switzerland for 4 years. And while I was there, I started off with a legal job with a Jewish organization. And then after my daughter was born, I took cooking classes at the Ritz Escoffier in Paris just for fun and ended up with an entirely new career.
The Ritz Escoffier, one of the top schools in Europe, how did you get in there?
Well, I was living in Geneva, and I had friends living in Paris, so I would take the train with my baby daughter in tow and come to Paris for the week to go to classes. And I chose pastry over food because I thought that would just be easier with kashrut. I would be able to, you know, kind of understand the recipes better and not be working with ingredients I didn't want to work with. And I had a great time learning, you know, everything I ever wanted to know about French pastry.
Your first book, The Jewish Baker, was an incredible book.
Yes, The Kosher Baker, yeah. So that book was entirely
dairy-free. Right.
And I still bake from that book all the time. I would say almost every Shabbat I make something from that cookbook. Because it has so many easy ones. There are so
many cinnamon buns
recipes
from that cookbook.
Ah, the cinnamon buns, yes. My children love that. I make the orange tea cake, which is on the cover of that cookbook, a cake that has Earl Grey tea and orange zest, and it's a one-bowl cake, so it's super easy, and it's perfect for somebody who doesn't bake at all.
Now, talking about the current book, as a cook and as a mother, I can understand that you'd want to cook healthy food, obviously. But what was the motivation specifically for this book as opposed to of your others?
Okay, a few things. So first of all, as a pastry chef who had written two baking books, The Kosher Baker and The Holiday Kosher Baker, and when you write dessert recipes, you have to test them over and over again. It's not like a soup that when it's finished, you can still add things to it and change it. So I was spending so much time baking, and then I had so many desserts. So just for my own health and for my family's health, I started cooking lighter food to balance out having all these desserts around. So for years, I had developed strategies for making Jewish food lighter and just eating lighter to balance out the desserts. And then my publisher came to me about 5 weeks after my mother passed away and asked me to write a healthy cookbook because healthy food is a big trend now. And
right.
It was the timing was you know, it was hard in that I wasn't sure I was ready for a new project, but I did need to eat better after Shiva and morning. You just, you know, don't always choose the healthiest foods to eat. So I knew that I needed to eat better myself.
I'm looking through the book, and one of the first recipes that struck my eye was your Brazilian feijoada, which you call the Brazilian cholent with collard greens and farofa.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about how you developed that particular recipe.
So I have a Jewish Brazilian friend, and I would always ask her questions about Brazilian food and the food she grew up with. And she's Ashkenazi, so she grew up with a lot of the same food that I did, except she ate a lot of black beans and rice. And she started buying me Brazilian cookbooks, and all of them had a recipe for feijoada, which is the national dish of Brazil.
Right.
And it's typically made with all the different parts of a pig. So I had never tasted it. I had never even seen it with my own eyes except in cookbooks. But I knew it was this treasured recipe in Brazil. So it's almost like looking at bouillabaisse as, you know, walking around France. I had never tasted it until I created my own kosher version. So I set out to create a feijoada by using different cuts of kosher meat and veal so that I could mimic the different textures of the pig that are supposedly in the traditional recipe.
How long did it take you to prepare the whole recipe once you had it down to where you wanted it?
Well, the first couple times I made it in the oven with like a big Dutch oven. You know, and I baked it for, you know, several, you know, probably eight or 10 hours until it got really, really soft and the meat comes off the bone. But then I realized that it seems so similar to making a traditional cholent, so I then tried it in a crock pot to see how it would come out. And then I realized it tastes so great cooking overnight, so I realized people could make this for Shabbat lunch.
Wish I had thought of it when I first published my version in 2013. I didn't think of doing it in the crock pot. I did it in the oven. It took forever.
Right, it does take forever. And it's interesting, if you make it in the crock pot, you have to use less water.
Ah.
So
I tell you to
reduce the amount of water by one cup. I made it last Shabbat, and I made it at about 8 o'clock in the morning. And at around 1 o'clock Friday, I ended up scooping out another probably good half cup, three-quarter cup of water because I found that it was just a little bit too liquidy.
I understand.
But it came out great. Everybody really liked it. So I was able to introduce it to people who had never seen it before.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a brisket bourguignon based on Julia Child's beef bourguignon.
Yes.
Now,
I love this recipe.
I've tried that one, by the way, for this Friday night. It was incredible.
Oh, I'm so glad.
In fact,
I don't always make it this time of year.
I published years ago.
Yeah, I'm always looking for new ways to make brisket, just because I like to mix things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that I also tried already was the Sri Lankan rice with dried fruits and nuts. Absolutely scrumptiously delicious.
You know, and did you read my head note where I got the idea for that?
Yes.
So in Machane Yehuda in Jerusalem, they have these spice mixes, right? And with nuts and dried fruit and dried herbs all throughout the market. And I had never heard of that until maybe about 5 years ago when I was in Israel on a trip visiting my daughter. Then I saw all these rice mixes and I brought them home and I made rice with it. And I thought it was great. It's not something that they really sell the same way here. So this was my version of making this rice with all these different wonderful flavors in it.
I had made similar salads, but never, ever, until I tasted your recipe, they bring out so many different incredible flavors, which sometimes I would not have thought would go together, and yet they were incredible together.
Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm going to have to make that again soon. I haven't made that one in a while. I really like it.
And it wasn't that hard to make either.
No, it's interesting. I've worked really hard in my savory food recipes to try to stand in the shoes of the chef in the kitchen, the home cook, and think about how much time they're willing to spend on a particular part of a meal and how many dishes and pots and pans they want to actually clean up. I have seen too many recipes in cookbooks that had side dishes that took two saucepans and so many different steps, and that's only part of the meal. So I really try to think about, if I was the cook preparing a meal, whether it's Shabbat or a weeknight dinner, how much time do I want to spend on a salad? How much time would I want to spend on a soup? Knowing that my recipe that a person is preparing from my cookbook, the Healthy Jewish Kitchen, is not the only recipe they're making for that meal.
Another recipe of yours that intrigues me, I haven't tried it yet, is your chocolate quinoa cake. I could never imagine using quinoa in a cake.
Well, somebody had told me about it years ago, but I had never seen a cake with quinoa. And then when I was developing recipes for this cookbook, I started researching it. And there were several online. And when I set out to create the book, I went back to the kosher baker, to my everyone's favorite chocolate cake, which is another one of the recipes from the kosher baker that I still make at least once a month, if not more often. And I modeled the chocolate quinoa cake based on that recipe with a goal of making that cake, the new cake, gluten-free. And I wanted to, make sure that it had a really rich chocolate flavor.
Going back to soups, since we're going back and forth, of course you have the famous bouillabaisse.
Yes.
But you have one that I have tried your recipe and found superb, the Tuscan farro soup.
Ah, yes, yes. That's, that's a really great winter soup.
I have also tasted it a few times in Italy myself, and I must say that the taste of your recipe was authentic, the real thing.
Well, I learned this recipe from Italian chefs in classes that I took 2 years ago, so that was great. Before we get away from the chocolate quinoa cake, I just wanted to mention something else that the very popular Food 52 blog called My Chocolate Quinoa Cake a Genius Recipe, and they made a video about preparing that cake that the last time I checked, which was probably 3 weeks ago, over 40,000 people had watched the video. So it was like one of the most popular cakes last Passover, and it's really so yummy. You can make it all year round. I made them last Shabbat as cupcakes. I made 20 cupcakes out of the recipe.
Wow.
And they were different as cupcakes. They baked a little differently. It had a different texture, and they were wonderful. But now we can go back
now
to soup again because, we have to balance out our desserts anyway.
Let me ask you one question. Let us assume that Shavuos didn't happen yet, and let us assume that this is the only cookbook that you have, and that you have to prepare it according to this cookbook. What would have been based on this cookbook?
I would have made I guess the question really answers if there's any, you have any vegetarians in your audience, like this would be the menu that they would want to make. So I have a pasta siciliana in the book where I bake eggplant in the oven and then mix it with a spicy tomato sauce, a garlicky sauce, and cheese and bake it in the oven. I'd make that. I also have blintzes that have a traditional filling, but the crepe is made out of buckwheat flour, and buckwheat is the same wheat as kasha, and it's a gluten-free grain, and it's really good for you. So I have my buckwheat blintzes. And then I might want to, if I was doing, you know, dairy or parv, I would do my dry rub salmon, which has no fat in it other than what's naturally in the salmon, and you grind up a bunch of spices and you rub it on the fish.
And talking about
and
kasha,
pretty much any of my side dishes would go with that. My chopped string beans, mm-hmm. or my, you know, my red salad, all go well with that.
Talking about kasha, you do have a kasha recipe.
Mm-hmm, I do.
I haven't tried it yet. Normally, Kasha and I are not exactly good friends, but you're having read yours, it sounds intriguing.
Yeah, I know it's interesting because kasha isn't something that my family really ate much of growing up. You know, the kasha and bow ties that I grew up with at, you know, kosher delis in New York mm-hmm. wasn't something that I made all that. Occasionally, I would make it on Rosh Hashanah. But since I always serve, like I like having kasha with brisket, but I also have mashed potatoes, my kids chose mashed potatoes over kasha every time. So this was a way to kind of bring kasha back and try to come up with something that a flavor profile that people already like. So people love lentils and rice. So the idea was to make it like lentils and rice but use kasha. But then I added in a bunch of Middle Eastern spices to kind of help the kasha have a more interesting flavor. Most people think it's boring, but it doesn't have to be.
Well, I'm willing to give it a try. So far, everything else I've tried in this book was good, so I have to assume that this one will be at least as good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I write a cookbook, by the time the cookbook is actually published, I will have made the recipes for about 2 years straight. And then when I start going on my book tour, so this book came out a few months ago, and I've traveled all over the United States, and I'm getting ready for a book tour in Israel in a few weeks, I'm making these recipes over and over and over again. So usually at that point, I stop making them for my family. But I find that I love the recipes in this book so much that I'm making them all the time. I had guests on Sunday. I made the sweet potato salad that has peanut butter and Asian flavors. I made the dry rub salmon. I made the quinoa cupcakes last Shabbat. I go back to this book all the time. Today I made, for dinner tonight, we had the everything marinade with flank steak and or London broil. And for many years, every time I made a marinade for steak, I would literally open up my spice cabinet and dump everything into a bag with oil, vinegar, soy sauce, honey, juice, mustard, no measuring, just dump things in a bag. And everybody would say, oh, this is so great. What's the recipe? Can I have the recipe? But I didn't have a recipe. So I finally forced myself to measure all the spices.
Another recipe that you have here, which I find interesting, which you do with kumquats, I usually do it with oranges, is
the
chicken. Coq au vin blanc. Yes.
Yes, it's so interesting. Okay, so, you know, like I mentioned, I've been doing on a book tour all over the country doing cooking demos, and I've made this chicken so many times. It comes out great with clementines as well, but I love the way the kumquats look. In the book, the picture just looks fabulous.
Right. In general, the photography is superb. I mean, you almost feel like reaching into the page.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really happy. This was a new photographer for me. I had been using the same photographer for the first three books. And for this book, my publisher hired a photographer and a whole team of people to make the food. And it was a different experience giving up some of the control of how things would be prepared and how they were cooked, but it was another testing of the recipes. So I got all these recipes retested by a team of people who really enjoyed them.
And since we are on the subject of chicken, I also happen to like your baked schnitzel with nut crust instead of the traditional plain breading or panko.
So it's so funny how I came up with that, because after every Pesach, I have so many containers of nuts sitting in my kitchen. And I think I created this recipe kind of thinking through wanting to do a gluten-free schnitzel coating, and I had all these nuts. So I thought, all right, let's see if I can make this work. And I made this many times before I was happy with it. And the great thing about the schnitzel, like my potato latkes as well, is that I've developed a method for kind of frying things in the oven. So you're not frying it in a pan with lots of oil. You're kind of baking it at a high temperature in the oven with oil in the pan. And it's just a great method for avoiding extra fat.
Since we are on the subject of avoiding extra fat, pasta is not exactly something that will help anybody avoid fat, yet it's delicious. And you do have
So I use whole wheat pasta for that. And I think that was the only time I really could get my kids to eat whole wheat penne, because it was filled with all this garlicky sauce and eggplants and cheese, and they ate it. They tried it, and they said, oh, you know, we actually like this. Yeah, my kids are happy to eat lots of vegetables and lots of salads and soups and natural food, but they don't want to give up their pasta.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, they're skinny, growing kids who play sports all day. They can eat what they want. I have to save my calories for babka.
Yes, I noticed that you have a recipe on that too.
Of course, it's my favorite. It's like one of my signature desserts. So I'm always creating new babka recipes, and I'm actually working on a couple of new ones right now.
Chocolate.
Chocolate's always the best, but this recipe has spelt flour in it. And it's a heartier dough. And this was one of those recipes that wasn't done until my twins were satisfied that it was chocolatey enough and soft enough, and they felt it was, you know, good enough for them. They really liked their classic babka recipes.
And that one is followed by the caramelized apple strudel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an apple strudel with a homemade whole grain dough. After, you know, years of making strudel with boxed phyllo or puff pastry, I wanted to come up with a dough that would be thin, it would be better for you. It's really tasty, too. I'm thinking about trying a recipe out to make knishes with that dough.
Mm.
It's on my
Sounds
to-do list, Chaim, so we'll see if I can create it for Rosh Hashanah, but it's on my list.
When you do, email it to me.
I will. I will. You can test it for me, and then I can publish it when it's ready.
Okay. Another one that I find fascinating is your fruit cobbler with chickpea and almond topping. Chickpea and almond?
Yeah, chickpea flour. It's great. It's great. I haven't made that one in a while. I made a cobbler today, but kind of by accident. I was experimenting with a galette dough. Galette is an open-faced tart, and I was rolling out this dough, which I had made with partially white whole wheat flour and regular flour, and it just didn't have enough fat in it, and it didn't hold together well, so I couldn't roll it out into a circle. It kept breaking. So instead of using the dough with the fruit on top, I dumped the fruit in the oven, crumbled up the dough, and put it on top, and my family's eating it right now very happily. So this is what you do when something doesn't come out right. You have to kind of find a way to repurpose it. So I'm really good at that. So, yeah, the chickpea flour has this wonderful nutty taste, and I really enjoy using it, you know, as a cobbler topping. It works great with, you know, the flavors you like to put in pie, you know, like the fruits. It's just delicious.
Another great recipe that I'm going to have to try is your whole wheat onion challah. And
oh, I make that a lot.
It was inspired by Ratner's. I remember in 1965 when I first came to YU. 65 was the years when the dinosaurs were still roaming the earth. Anyway, my first introduction to New York restaurants was Ratner's Yes,
and they had these wonderful rolls that had onions and seeds on top.
Right.
And, yeah, no, I've been wanting to create a 100% whole wheat challah for years, and I'm really proud of this recipe because it's really soft. It has a nice, you know, kind of stringy challah texture to it.
Then
you know, I wish I had
this
challah in my freezer all the time.
Then you have another interesting one that I wish you had a picture for, the rosemary focaccia.
Yeah, we didn't get to do a photo for that one. But focaccia pretty much looks the same all the time. It's just that big slab of spongy, wonderful bread cut into sticks. It's really yummy. I really like this recipe. I like making – the fun part about making focaccia is that you spread the dough out on an oiled cookie sheet, and then you cover it with oil, and then you put plastic on top. And while it rises for a little while, you have to keep squishing the dough into the corners of the pan so that it stretches out a little bit. And I always find that really fun to do, like just squishing the dough and getting it into the right shape.
Now, let me ask you a question. What of all the desserts that you have in this book would be your favorite one?
Well, you're asking me which of the desserts is my favorite?
Yes.
Let's see. I'm going to tell you. I think it's the chocolate quinoa cake. I would say it's definitely that one. Yeah, I keep making it. I love it. It's so rich and delicious, and I love that it's gluten-free, so my gluten-free friends can enjoy it as well. It's just a chocolate cake that more people can love.
Looking through it, one that sounds very, very interesting that I have to try. Had I stayed home for Shavuos, I probably would have tried that one. It would have been the mini cheesecake with oat and brown sugar crust and strawberry puree.
Yeah, I just did that for an event in Long Island. I did my fish tacos with mango coleslaw as the menu. It was a pre-Shavuot event, and then I did the cheesecakes. And unfortunately, in a commercial oven, they got a little bit overbaked, so I didn't get the fluffiness and creaminess of the cheesecake that I had wanted, but everybody still liked them. So they're really nice because they're small. It's very dangerous having a large cheesecake sitting around for the holiday. So I always think it's nice to have, you know, recipes in mini form, like my babka bites and little rugelach, so you can grab a little bit of something. You don't feel like you have to have a whole slice.
Now, there is one soup recipe that I'm going to try this Shabbos when I'm going to be in Lakewood by one of my kids, and I think it's perfect for summer, the watermelon, peach, and mint gazpacho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made that also at that same event in Long Island, and it was a big hit. It's a very nice recipe. I felt that the watermelons we used weren't quite perfect yet, so I feel like, you know, I would want to wait another few weeks till the watermelons have more flavor. But it's a real – and the same with the peaches. Like, the peaches were out of season as well. But I really like this.
Right.
I like having cold soups in the summer. It's. I mean, I live in Washington, D.C. It gets very hot.
Not as humid as New York, though.
Oh, I live in a swamp, so we get really hot weather there. Although, you know, the challahs do come out really great in the summer.
Because they can rise.
Well, I want to make sure that your audience knows that in addition to my books, I also have recipes on my website, thekosherbaker.com, and I keep trying to add more recipes because I'm not writing another book just yet. So when I have new ideas, that's where they're going.
What's the name of your website again?
Thekosherbaker.com.
Okay. I'll make sure to check it out. And I assume that you have more than just the baking recipes there.
No, I have there was a conversation on Facebook today. Somebody was looking for a really good spinach, something to do with spinach. And I have a really nice spinach soup. I have a chicken recipe. I have a white corn soup, which is great for summer. And I'm going to put up something I call guac corn mole. It's like guacamole with corn and other ingredients in it that's really yummy and crunchy. So I'll probably put that up in the next week or so. It's getting to be that season of fresh corn.
There are so many more questions I could ask, but unfortunately, Father Time is against us. As always, it's a pleasure to have you on our show.
Oh, that's great. And
all of my
four cookbooks you can find on Amazon.com. And you can get more information on the website as well. And reach out to me if you have any questions.
Absolutely. And I assume that your website has an email we can write to.
Yes, I get emails all the time, especially in the hours before major Jewish holidays. People send me lots of questions.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
We enjoyed having you on the show. And until the next time, good night.
Be well
and
eat well this summer.
Thank you.